I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hola mi gente, familia. Welcome to another episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. One of your hosts, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarina Martinez.
And we are beyond excited. We're talking about a subject that really sort of hits home for us as a northern Mexican family. We can talk a little bit about what is going to be happening today, which is Sotol, and many other subjects I'm sure we're going to touch upon. And we're very blessed and very honored to have a guest with us that's visiting, through all the channels that we're desperately helping to figure out. And of course, we're talking about Sandro Canovas, is a binational third brick maker turned adobero. Okay, so the idea being is, he was raised in Mexico City. He immigrated to Oregon in 1995 and began working with earth-based construction techniques. Okay, that's very important. Eventually returning to his familia, his cultural heritage of the adobe, and then coming back to roots. And after spending 19 years as a seasonal commercial fisherman in the Bering Strait of Alaska, which I've been there, I understand. Now he makes home in Presidio County, Texas. And while he's not playing with mud and all these beautiful natural elements, he's advocating and educating people about the traditional sources of sotol and how it is being appropriated, how it's affected the efforts in U.S. and in this relationship in Mexico. So today we're going to do a deep dive into what sotol is. And we want to really figure out the definition of it. So, bienvenido, Sandro.
Muchas gracias, Aaron. Muchas gracias, Sarela. You know, saludos from West Texas, from La Frontera. And I am really, really happy and thankful to you guys for opening. Can talk sotol and what is happening with the current affairs of sotol, because destilado. Yeah, it's a new kid on the block, and I think that the most important thing and start with around sotol is that it's not an agave, you know, like mezcales and tequilas. That is very important to point out since the beginning, because I think that the general population and the consumers sometimes, you know, get a lot of false information, and they think that this plant called Dasylirion, it's an agave. That's the main difference in between the sotol and the other Mexican destillates that are causing such hip these days.
Isn't that related to the onion?
Yes, that's a good point to touch. You know, there's been different taxonomic classifications during the years. You know, in the 60s, somebody named it an agave, but the most recognized it's the one that came out of a person from a university in Austin, Texas, and it was done, I think, in 1994, but published into 1997. Where they found out that the sotoles are more related to onions and asparagus than to agaves. And one thing that is very interesting is when you have a cabeza de sotol and you turn it upside down, it looks like an onion. You know, it has the, you know, and agave sotoles cabezas are very big, but when you turn them, you know, upside down, the way that the leaves start from the bottom or from the root of the plant, it really does look like an onion.
Okay, so really quickly, so how we differentiate it from an agave, which we have the piña, obviously, if it's mezcal, it's roasted, if it's tequila, it's steamed and then distilled and fermented and all that. So what is the actual base of the sotol? What are we looking at? So what are we fermenting? What, you know, it's a root, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a piña, but of what, Mom? Is it a cactus? Is it a vegetable? No. Like, what are we talking about?
It's related to the onion, honey.
Okay.
Yes, they're called Dasylirions, the sotoles. Mm-hmm. And in the state of Chihuahua, at least there are four species of Dasylirions that are distilled. In Mexico, I think we have around seven. You know, people distill Dasylirion in Oaxaca. They distill it also in Sonora, but they call it differently.
Bacanora.
Because of the denomination of origins. The Bacanora, it's actually an agave distillate.
Yeah.
But the distillate that they make in Sonora out of Dasylirion, they call it Palmilla. Also, it's also very good, but the flavors are very different from the sotoles that we have in Chihuahua. The difference that I can tell you, you know, on it's that yes, in the mezcal, in the tequila, they call it piñas. Here in Chihuahua, the maestros sotoleros in the culture, it's called a cabeza. It's also a plant that eats, that grows above ground, but not like agave. The agaves have big leaves or pencas. The leaves of the sotoles are very thin, you know, and they look like a palmilla, like a yuca. Sometimes people get confused with those, but you know, that's how you can differentiate it. Some of the species have the thorns, the spinas, going up. Others have them looking down. It depends on the region. The ones that are the most known on the type of sotol or Dasylirion plants are the Huilleri that grows in the mountain regions. And in the mountain regions, are the plants have obviously more access to water, and that makes it the flavors of the sotoles from the mountain region to have different flavors from the mountain regions. The types of sotol that we have in Chihuahua are separated in three: the desert region. That it's the area that it's closer to where I live, and it's the one that it has the most extensive extension geographically. The type of sotol that grows in that region, it's called cedrosanum. The sotoles of the desiertos come from that variety of sotol. We also have the prairie sotoles that are a smaller area around Casas Grandes, Juarez, on that northern region, and Janos also. And in that region, they have both species, the cedrosanum or the Huilleri, that are produced. And again, on the mountain region, you have the Huilleri. The interesting thing about the mountain region sotoles is that there are some maestros sotoleros in that area that they make ensembles of sotoles that are a mix of sotol with agave.
Wow. Mom, and, you had a question, Mom?
Well, the flowers of the plants also called the sote, And are they cooking them? You know, because I know that in central Mexico, the flower of one of those agaves is used as food in Veracruz, and they make this very delicious, delicate soup and mole. So is the flower eaten? I don't remember.
No, with the sotol, that's not the case. The stem of the sotol, it's also called the quiote.
Yeah, and that's delicious eaten.
In agave they're delicious, but with the sotol, it's not eaten because the flowers are very tiny. And the way that the quiotes of the sotoles grow, they have, the sotoles also have female and male flowers, you know, and the way that they grow, when I learned how to differentiate them, it's because the one of the two, they curl a little bit, you know. And it also depends on the species, the color of the stem of the flower.
Let's go to the cooking process.
For the process of making sotol.
Yeah. So now we understand that it's not an agave, which bomb. I will tell Manny Hinojosa, and he's a global ambassador for Tequila Cazadores, and he was certain it was some sort of agave distillation, so I can't wait for him to hear this para joderlo y echarle madre. So now we know what it is. Now, how does the process start, Sandro, please?
The process is very similar of what traditional mezcales are made. The way that it starts, it's when the maestros, you know, go to the areas where the plant, the sotoles grow, and they go to cut the plant. In mezcal, or tequila, they call it jima.
Yeah, here, but jimar, yeah.
That word it's not used. Here the maestros use the word tumbar. Vamos a tumbar sotol.
Wow, I love that.
It's the way that it's called. I've been very lucky, you know, to go many times to tumbar sotol with maestros, friends of mine. I remember once that I went with Don Polo Derma and with his mulas. There was a man and his son. He was the kid was 13 years old. His father had been cutting sotol for 35 years, you know. And I'll share some photos with you of that time that I went. So the process starts with the tumba, and the maestro has the knowledge to go and select the plants, you know. They select the sotoles out.
And what is the maturation? So if an agave takes 5 to 7 years, you know, depending. So what is the maturation when you can, you know, take him out of the ground?
That's a very good question, Aaron. And that later on in our conversation, I want to tie this question to sustainability.
Yes, of course. Know? Go ahead. We'll touch it again. We'll touch it again.
Okay. On the maturity, the age that the plants of sotol reach maturity when they're ready for harvesting, which is the first process, the first part of the process to make a sotol, on the desert region, which is the Cedrosanum species, they take in between 15 to more than 30 years to mature. You know. So that's something that I always wanna share with people. I think that we as consumers have to take this thing seriously, because the rate of consumption that it's happening. So on that species on the desert region, it takes between 15 to more 30 years, and on the mountain region in between 15 to 18 years. The other thing that also you have to connect to this is that it takes around 15 to 22 kilos of desert sotol to produce 1 liter.
Oof.
So
the yield is very small.
So when you come the fact that it takes so many years to produce, to mature, and it takes so much or certain amount of plant to produce 1 liter, it should be a concern for everybody.
So talking about we obviously want people to know more about sotol, right? What do you think needs to happen in order for that to do? There has to be a sustainability conversation that needs to be had, as you mentioned, right? But what is the flavor profile? So if somebody's never tasted sotol, does it need to have a cocktail that it's paired with? What are some of the flavors that have a good affinity with sotol? Or how do you popularize it in a way that's responsible?
These are very important questions. And Anna, that I want to share with you and your mom and your audience. I personally might say it, I'm very old school and I don't like drinking cocktails, even though I know bartenders that do an incredible, work with the beauty of the cocktails that they serve. But these bartenders that I've been lucky to know in Chihuahua are surrounded in the cultural landscape that these destillates come from. I personally like drinking the sotol as it comes from the vinatas, as it comes from the stills.
That's the way I grew up, with a vinata on the ranch.
Yes.
And our Nayu Chavez used to run the, and his father, I think, was the one. Carly's father used to run it.
Where in Chihuahua, Sarela?
En Aguasarca, en Chihuahua, Punto de Janos, pero más siendo la sierra, donde empieza la Sierra Madre. Era un rancho grandísimo de 13,000 hectáreas.
Qué bonito.
Y estaba en un lugar que se llamaba Aguasarca. And we would go, and then we would wait until the piñas came out, and you would chew on the piñas, and then spit out the, you take out all the juice and spit out all the fiber.
The fiber, exactly.
And then have diarrhea for 2 weeks, but it was worth it because of the flavor.
But it was so good.
We would drink it with big glasses of freshly squeezed orange juice.
You totally transported me to that area. Funny thing, I usually carry a cooked cabeza de sotol on the back of my truck, and I like chewing it.
Sandor, you're a weirdo. You probably have like adobe. You probably have all kinds of weird stuff in your truck. I can only imagine. But you're like, no, you think.
But no, Aaron, the thing is, this is one of the delicacies that we have in this cultural landscape. So I have the luck that, I get go to the vinatas, they're cooking. I get, they have the cooked cabezas of sotol. I, like your mom described, I love the flavor of the cooked cabeza of sotol. It has so much sugars that you can just chew on it and chew on it and chew on it, And I also like carrying the cabeza of sotol because I can share it with friends. This is something of the culture, the regional gastronomy that people have never experienced,
And
I like sharing it with whoever, and because it's already cooked and the high content of sugars, it doesn't go bad for a long time.
Yeah, so let's talk about so tequila has to be 40% alcohol to come into the United States, right? So what is the alcohol levels with, and what are some of the regulations behind sotol, right? To get it into the States and understand all that. So people, you know, because I think that has a lot to do. What do you think?
Okay. I'm right before I answer that question, I'm going to step back a little bit. I'm going to tell you of the similarity of the process.
Yes, so please.
It's harvested and in the hills, depending on the region. Then it's brought to the vinatas, you know. Usually when the maestros harvest the cabezas de sotol, they put it in these baskets that are called langarillas on the sides of the burros or the mulas. And there you see the burritos all loaded with cabezas de sotol, you know, going into the communities. Then it's brought to the vinatas. Once it's brought to the vinatas, the sotol cabezas are cooked in an horno, an underground horno, you know?
Underground. Okay.
It's not like tequila that it's cooked in kilns above ground. You know, all the sotoles, traditional sotoles, are cooked underground in hornos that usually can hold between 200, 300 cabezas. Then an horno of that size, it takes about three days to be cooked. And then
they put hot stones on it, or what?
They put They put stones on the side of the oven, and then they put the volcanic stones. Then they put as a liner, and then they put the wood on the bottom. They put on
what kind of wood? What kind of wood?
It depends on the availability, you know. There's people that use a lot of mezquite. It depends on the region, you know, because, for example, in the mountain region, they don't have the mezquites that they have in the desert region. And then they lead that, then they put stones on top of that, because otherwise, the cabezas will burn immediately. Then they put the cabezas de sotol. They cover them with palm trees, and then they put the tarps and dirt. And for 3 days, the maestros and their helpers or their families, you know, because many times the family, it's involved in the whole process, you know, they're there looking after the horno for 3 days. Many times they dig a hole, or the way that it's cooking, it opens up somewhere, and they put a palo so they can pour water, you know, while the horno is cooking, so the cabezas don't burn. Then they open the horno 3 days after, and then the next process is to smash those heads. The cabezas of sotol traditionally are smashed with axes. You know, it's made by hand. So yeah, you know, one of the things, you know, that it's interesting, Zarela and Aaron, is that the tequilas and mezcales many times are harvested with a coa, with this kind of round blade. The sotoles are all harvested with an axe. You know? Wow.
So when you mean an axe, you mean that's how they extract them from the ground?
Yes. They use a rebar to cut the connection between the stem, the bottom of the cabeza, and the root. They pop it. You know, they hit it a few times. I mean, I've seen maestros, you know, that they do it so quick in like one or two times, and boom. But then the leaves are trimmed with an axe.
And what do they do with the sticks?
With the leaves, you know,
the
maestros, they don't use anything. They don't use it. But one thing that is really beautiful on how all that, the tarahumaras use it to make a cesteria, to make baskets. And I actually know a couple of of people in the industry that through a friend are making a connection. His wife was the director of the Comisión Estatal of Pueblos Indígenas, and they're trying to make a connection so those leaves are harvested or collected when they're harvesting sotol, and then they brought and be brought to the Tarahumara communities that are usually very far away. So the communities have access to those leaves and they can build their baskets and help their economy in La Sierra.
Wow,
I'm very, cool. I'm very, very supportive of projects like that, as you can imagine.
And so are we. That's amazing.
I think it's important, you know, that people make that commitment, you know, and so there is a benefit for both, you know, because otherwise those leaves would stay just out there in nature. So that's how the process is made. You were asking me about the flavor profiles, and you asked me also about the ABV, the degree of
alcohol. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So if a gringo's coming and they have sotol, because I have it in my restaurant, and I try to explain to a customer and we bring sotol out, and we say, you want to have a little a taste of Mexico, and especially where we're from the north, here's sotol. What do you think we should tell our staff how to explain the flavor profile?
That's a very good question, Aaron. You know, for me, it's very interesting how in the gastronomy or bar or liquor industry in the United States, people describe the flavors or the aromas of the sotoles, you know, because the way that the maestros describe them are very different. You know, when I hear the bartenders or the brand owners describing for example, let's go for the most complexes, you know, the ones that are, in my opinion, the more flavorful of the sotoles, which are the ones from the mountain region. The ones from the mountain region, like for example, in the city of Madera, where I have a few friends that produce sotoles there, when people try the sotoles of that region, the people go and describe them as being floral many times, that it has junipers, that it has flavors of wood. When you talk to the people in those regions, the first thing that most of everybody would tell you is that the flavor and the aromas are of tierra mojada.
Petricor.
Yeah, and exactly. And for me, you know, I'm lucky that I'm very familiar with the sotoles, and many times you don't have to taste them, just with the aroma, I can tell you if it's a desert sotol or a mountain sotol, because the flavors are and the aromas are very different. people describe the desert sotoles as being leathery, pepperminty, more dry. And I think that those are the basic differences. They come, these flavors come from different species of sotol, from different regions, you know, that give them these aromas. I also think that the fact that these plants live in very extreme weather conditions, you know, in the desert region, the sotol can be at night at minus 20 Celsius and during the day at over 110 Fahrenheit, you know, on the same day.
It also depends on how long, how they're going to cook them, if they're going to be smoky or not smoky, you know.
It's all smoked. The traditional sotoles are smoked, even though these days there's people that are, because sotol is going with its industrializations, there's people that use diffusers, you know, and because they want to maximize yields, and the flavors of the sotoles changed. You know,
so Sandro, what would be your ultimate goal for sotol, and how does it move forward? What would you want to see happen? You know, what would you like? Would you imagine it being in retail shops? Do you imagine it being, you know, served derecho in certain restaurants, and then preserving the legacy of it? Like, what do you think is the future of sotol, and how do we put the word out? How do we do that? You know what I mean?
You know, that's something that it's a very absolute question, Aaron. Obviously, my take on sotol has been always to preserve traditions, you know, and to take care of the natural resource. But the reality is that the industry is pushing sotol into industrialization. And with that, because they're looking at the cocktail industry, you know, that's where a lot of the market is going. And I think that each person or each brand owner chooses their niche. You know, there's brands that sell sotol as it comes out of the steel. You know, those are the sotoles that I like to drink. You know, the ones that have higher ABVs, you know, you go to the communities and the sotoles are 100, 110, you know. I understand that those are not sotoles for everybody, but those are the sotoles that we're used to drink. Those are the sotoles that your mom grew up with.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I do have something to inject here because, you know, this... my first boyfriend was related to the person that had the vinata at the ranch. And his father had learned from the Chinese who were there building the railroads in Casas Grandes how to do a rattlesnake sotol. So every year they go out and do a rattlesnake roundup and cut the head and take out the poison and make some sotol with vibora.
And it was supposed to be like a healing, you know, thing.
And today when I was looking up at sotol on the internet, there was one named vibora.
Wonderful.
Yes, there's some people that make that sotol. And you are one of the few people, Sarela, that I've heard, you know, that there's that connection in between the railroad workers and the sotol making on the region that you are describing. Obviously, nowadays, that kind of sotol has spread, you know, and I think that it depends on everybody's taste. I personally like the sotoles that they come straight from the steel.
Well, you know? Me too, but I mean, but that's possible for you, but that's not possible for me.
Yes. Well, I think that there's access into the United States for those types of sotoles. Funny thing, yesterday I saw a friend of mine and that I had promised some sotol, and I had brought him a higher proof, and he didn't accept the bottle I gave him.
He didn't like it?
No, he wanted he liked it, but he cannot drink it. It's too heavy for him. And
well, you know, if you know, I don't know if you know any of the Gabilondo family, you know, that has all those ranches put together there in that area, starting with ours and going, that's my family. So if you ever have one, drop it by the Santa Anita and have him send it to me.
Of course. You are, yes, I will be very happy to help you with that.
Or I will send you a mailing address in Texas, which will be better, or here.
Yes, we can do that. We can do that. I can arrange for that to be shipped to you.
That would be wonderful.
But, you know, because I think you should try different sotoles from different regions. And one thing that I want to say on all this is that, you know, with the process, the tendencies of consumptions of the Mexican that are happening with the distillates in these new markets, what is happening is that the traditions are getting dissolved or destroyed because there's more extraction and putting more pressure on the producers. And that's where a lot of the flavors and the gusto histórico, it's going to get lost. You
so
know?
Then the key is to do specialty ones.
Exactly. And I think another part too, Mom, is like, as we say on our podcast is, you know, the conversation is never over. It's just beginning, right? And I think, Sandro, you have so much to give and so much to share. I think it's important to let people know how they can contact you and continue this conversation. Because sadly, you know, we only have a certain amount of time. But how do people reach out to you?
Well, I have an Instagram account under El Adobero, where people can see a lot of the stuff that I do around Sotol. Right now, we had been taking a break for about 2 months because we were working a lot on putting pressure on one of the producers here in Texas to respect the denomination of origin of Sotol. Happily, we were able to put them in a position where they removed the name Texas Sotol from their bottles, but they're still using destilado of 100% Sotol, which for many of us, that's not enough. You know, we want them to remove the word Sotol from their labels. And the reason why they're using that word Sotol is because they know that the word Sotol has a very heavy historical and cultural weight that they can capitalize on.
They're
recently relevant. But now I guess we have to say adios.
But here's the deal. First of all, we are so, so grateful to have you, Sandro, here visiting with us on Cooking in Mexican from A to Z, of course, on Heritage Radio Network. And if you want more information, we're going to put up more stuff on heritageradionetwork.org. And then any links, any more information, questions that you might have, please engage the site. Because like we like to say, the conversation never ends. It's just beginning. And Sandro, muchísimas gracias por estar con nosotros y compartir todo tu sabiduría, everything that you are. I mean, thank you so much. You're amazing. And I hope we have you back and we'll talk about another spirit and we can talk more on this conversation.
And we have to talk about adobes, Sandy.
I know. And then we have to talk about adobes too. But we're going to get to that. So muchísimas gracias.
Thank you, Aaron. I replied to your mom on the adobe today, but for some reason the email and the photos of the adobes in Chihuahua didn't go through. But one thing I wanna say besides thank you before we finish the conversation is that the best way that I think that for people to learn about Sotol, it's to come visit Chihuahua.
Exactly.
You know, and I always tell that to people. You know, it's safe to travel. It's safe to travel to Chihuahua City and these regions from El Paso crossing to Juarez. You know, you can take the bus. You can rent a car. It's safe to travel. I always encourage people. You know, years ago, like 4 years ago, I took Anthony Bourdain south. You know. And the plan was he was going to come back and we were going to go and see to see Abinata. He had never tried Sotol, you know. I introduced him to Sotol. So it's safe to come to Marfa. If people come to Marfa, look for me, you know. Like
we will be there.
And I can, and I would love to take you, you know. It's something that I always do.
If my let's go to the Cosmico. Cosmico y echamos desmadre, mi rey. Me encantaría hacerlo contigo.
Claro, Aaron. Están, de verdad se los digo. Everybody's welcome. You know, they can contact me. There's distilleries not far from the border, like an hour and an hour half. I have the Vinatas, and we can go visit. And I think that's the best way that people can learn about these beautiful landscapes and the pueblos and the people and the culture where and the work, you know, that requires to make this wonderful distillate from the north of Mexico.
Okay. Un gustazo, mi rey. Te mando abrazos, mi Sandro, okay?
Querido. Gracias, Aaron. Gracias, Arela.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. Una más en mis entrañas.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat & 3.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.